This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Dasharan Johan, and my guest on today's show is a final year medical student at the University of Malaya who has been awarded the highly prestigious Rhodes Scholarship. He will be pursuing two master's programs in Oxford University, and he hopes to one day find a cure for dengue. So, joining me right now via Zoom is Malaysian Rhodes Scholar Subhashan Vadibela. For those who are unfamiliar, every year the Rhodes Trust in Oxford offers 100 full scholarships to the best of the best students from all around the world. So it's a pretty big deal. Subhashan, take me back to the moment you found out that you received the scholarship. What were you doing and how did you learn of the news?
So it was quite early in the morning. So it was 2 days after the interview because the email came in through the UK time. So the Rhodes counterpart at UK actually sent me the email. And it was the first thing that I saw when I woke up. So that was quite shocking. And I couldn't believe it because the email didn't immediately say, congratulations, you're the Rhodes Scholar. But it just highlighted, what are my next steps? So then I read it a couple of times, then I immediately called my parents and my mom, my sister. Yeah, there was a lot of emotion. I would have never imagined myself joining these ranks of people. And that realization just hit me. And it's a bit overwhelming too, because there's all these expectations. But at the same time, it's also really exciting to know that there's this journey ahead of me that has so many different possibilities. And yeah, I just felt blessed at that time.
Who's setting these expectations, as you mentioned? Is it expectations you have for yourself, or is it expectations from people around you, your family members perhaps?
Yeah, so in terms of expectations, I think Rhodes Scholars and the scholar group itself are a group of overachieving scholars from the other countries. They achieve great things, and maybe it wasn't on my mind at that time that I would become the next Rhodes Scholar, because you never really know what you're signing up for. And when that happened, I started realizing that, oh, okay, so now I have to present myself in a certain way. I have to shoulder all these responsibilities that comes with a scholarship, because people may not say it out openly, but being given a scholarship actually comes with its own set of responsibilities and how you're expected to behave, how you're expected to fulfill your tenure during the scholarship. In terms of the other finalists as well, we were all from very different backgrounds. And after the interview, so I couldn't meet them before the interview. So after the interview, we formed a WhatsApp group and we were talking. And that was when I found out what their stories were. And it's quite impressive and really inspiring. There were students who were working on climate change. There were students who were working on education.
When it comes to academic achievement, have you always been this way? I mean, were you the guy who always placed top in class? Were you the kind of guy who, you know, would come out of an exam hall and tell his friends, for example, that the paper was so difficult, you know, gone, hancho, only for you to end up getting 98 marks and, you know, make all your friends roll their eyes in annoyance and jealousy?
I hope I'm not that person you described.
I mean, don't mind my description. This is just a description by someone who clearly never got 98 marks for any subjects ever.
In high school and also in college, I think I did do quite well. I graduated from my high school as with the best award in my high school and in my college as well. I think when you come into university, things are a bit more different, and academic achievements are really less black and white, and it's more gray of what you hope to achieve and what fields that you want, you are interested in. So your exams can only describe you that much, you know. And you start realizing that people in university are very broad, and some people are doing amazing things, which really the exams can only test that much. And there are so many different exams as well, so it's impractical for one person to do great in all the exams. I failed exams in universities. Yeah. So I think that that mindset that you have to be that you have to achieve well in every test along the way is, I don't think it's right. But academic excellence does underscore this award.
I also read that the scholarship isn't just awarded to someone who's academically excellent, but also someone who advocates for their local communities and champions causes for the good of the world. So what cause do you champion?
So you're right. The selection committee and the scholarship itself is really looking for someone who's not only smart in the books, but also someone who has ventured outside of their own self-interest to work with communities or to do something that is outside of their own bubble. So for me, myself, I think that when I came, I moved from Ipoh to KL to study when about 4 years ago, six years ago. At that time, what I really saw was very apparent is how much disparity there is in Kuala Lumpur. Most of my time is spent in PJ and also in Sri Hartamas in my college. And at that time, you can really see that KL is a city that's peppered with really affluent areas. And there are other areas that is just 2 minutes away that is deplorable and full of people who are not doing as well. So these drastic disparities, I think, is also the case in most developing and middle-income countries. And so most of my work with the community has gone into working with these urban poor communities in KL that are very obvious around us, but still they're out of our mind. In college, I did work with soup kitchens. And when I came into university, there was a lot more opportunities to work with doctors who go down to the communities and also do medical as well as outreach work.
I'm curious to know about your family. What was it like growing up? Did your parents spend a lot of time at work? Did they always stress the importance of education?
My mom, I think, my mom is a teacher, just to give a background. She's a high school teacher and she teaches Tamil. So the stress on education has always been there. But she's not the type to micromanage our education. I have a sibling, my sister and I, and she was mostly busy with work because my dad has got a fruit shop. And right after work every day at school, she would then help out at my dad's shop. And me and my sister used to help out when we were very young. But once we were in school, it was mostly independent learning for us. And a lot of my motivation to study and also my drive to do well in exams and also realization that, you know, education will get you to places was sparked by my mom especially. But also, a lot of it is also comes from my sister.
And, what does your sister do?
She's a chemist and she works on water treatment.
So you have a family of high achievers there. So like, growing up, did you always sort of look up to your sister?
Yeah, I did. And she's her personality is a bit different from me. I think that I'm more sort of guarded and reserved, but she's more jovial, she's more outgoing, she's very adventurous, she tries out new things. So I think she's being elder than me. She has tried and failed sometimes and like tried and succeeded in a lot of other things, and that has sort of set a precedent. So I think that was also one of the nice things growing up.
And how did your family react to you being awarded the Rhodes Scholarship? I seem to get the impression that you are pretty close to your family. So I assume they were just excited and beyond happy for you.
My sister especially, because I think she also experienced a lot of the application journey with me, because like I said, the interview, it was probably one of the most difficult things I have gone through, and she helped me prepare for the interview too. And so when I told her, she was in disbelief, I was in disbelief. We would have never have imagined us here. But my mom always reacts in, She was in tears. She said, okay, put down the phone. And then she probably went and cried and then called me back.
Well, on that note, we do need to go for a very quick commercial break. I'm speaking with Malaysian Rhodes Scholar Subhashan Vadibela, and this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Darshan Johan, and I'm joined on Zoom by Subhashan Vadibela, final year student at the University of Malaya, who has been awarded the highly prestigious Rhodes Scholarship. And we are having a chat on Subhashan's journey thus far and his dream to find a cure for dengue. So Subhashan, you mentioned that your sister is the more outgoing one, where you're more reserved. So I'm also very curious to know about your childhood. Growing up, were you someone who was active outside the four walls of the classroom? Did you play sports, a music instrument perhaps? Did you go on dates, romantic relationships? Were all of this part of your life?
So my high school was mostly spent with books, I have to be honest. And that's because I was a bit chubby in school. So I was 90 kilograms. I was the fat kid in the class. And I think that sort of pushed me away from most sport activities and also engaging in other activities. In terms of music, I've never had an inclination since I was young. But a lot of my time in high school was also spent at my dad's fruit shop. So that was another part of me growing up. At the end of my SPM, that was when I decided, okay, my weight was holding me back and I had to do something about it. And I knew that I was going towards a career in healthcare and I wanted to practice what I preach. So then, so that was when I took up running. I went for marathons, and then my sister since before that she goes for marathons, so then I joined her, and that sort of became enjoyable escape for me, and until now I still enjoy going for marathons running.
I think that's absolutely fantastic. So what was it exactly that made you go, you know, I've been neglecting my fitness and health and now I need to make it a priority?
I think that a lot of our health growing up is it's a premise of individual. When you're young, there's just so much you can do, but there's also a big part of your habits, eating habits in the family and things like that. So when I was younger and when I was chubby, it didn't really bother me, but it comes to a point where you become more socially conscious when you, probably in high school, and I started realizing that, okay, I am shying away from a lot of opportunities because I don't want to get up on stage and speak, because then people would just be looking at my size and not what I say. Or other opportunities where I wouldn't want to go for sports activities with my friends or my cousins because I would just bring everyone else down in the team. So it was sort of that realization, I think, that motivated me mainly.
Subhashan, I'm also wondering if the pursuit of academic excellence can be a little overwhelming. You know, when you were or are pushing yourself year after year after year after year after year to achieve academic excellence, especially recently, are there moments where the competitiveness becomes too overwhelming to the point that it affects your mental health? Or is the competitive nature of education something that you thrive on?
So the premise for competition is that there's a finish line and you have to get there faster than everyone else. And there comes to a point, especially I feel in university, where you start realizing that it's not really a race, that it's really a marathon, and you don't really have to get there quicker than everyone else. Everyone has got their own pace. So with that realization, you start realizing that you have to define what is excellence for you academically. So there is always a minimum bar that you have to achieve. Other than that, anything else that you would like to achieve is your own individual motivation, your own individual drive. At least that's how it works in medical school. There is really no point comparing with another person or comparing with someone else in my cohort, because I've got different goals, they've got different goals. We can probably compare in a sense of a minimum set bar that everyone hopes us to achieve to become a safe doctor. But beyond that, it's what drives you, what makes you happy as a person. The honest answer is I do thrive on being good at what I do, but I decide what I want to be good at, and I don't have to compete with my friends.
And it's the same with fitness or running a marathon, right? It's less about being in competition with others and more about pushing yourself to the limit. So what is it that drives you?
So motivation, I feel, comes from your experiences. It could be your experiences growing up or your experiences in a professional setting. And mine is sort of a combination of both. Especially in medical school, going through medical school, in Klang Valley, I've seen a lot of patients with tropical infectious disease like dengue, leptospirosis. And I found myself enjoying talking to them and also seeing the doctors treat them and also reading about these patients. So that was how I molded what gets me up in the morning and drives me in the morning, that I want to help these patients beyond what we already do. And another thing is that I want to do more than what has already been done, for them. And I think that that could come with areas in these tropical infectious disease that are not explored, like the science behind them, which are understudied. So that was the motivation that I figured out along the way.
And what do you do when you're faced with failures? Are you someone who tends to criticize and bash yourself up because of it? Or are you someone who just accepts the results, take it positively and just move on?
I think when you're faced with failures, for me, my immediate reaction would be to be hard on myself, like you mentioned, because a lot of part of how I was growing up is geared towards sort of being this masochist who's like always hard on yourself and deriving short-term pleasures from that push that you're giving yourself. But then you come to a realization that actually there's going to be a lot of failures that are ahead of you. And how you react to these failures in long-term is what actually is going to define you as a person. And reacting in a short term, you will be fatigued as a person. So really how I react to failures now is to allow myself to feel whatever I feel immediately when I find out about the news. But after that, it's just to take a step back and also ask myself what went wrong. I am very sure in any situation of failures, there would always be something to work around your failure. It often never is another way or a way where once you have a failure, that's the end of it. It's never the case. And really, what is stopping you from asking for help from people and also talking to your friends, to your family? I think that also helps you, because sometimes you think you know yourself, but your family members and your friends are a better reflection of yourself from another POV.
I think I'm allowed to say this next thing because I'm Indian as well. Did you want to pursue health sciences because your Indian family told you to?
My parents would never admit it. That they would never admit the fact that when growing up, that they've sort of had this. There's this silent pressure pushing you towards a health sciences career and away from all the other careers. But I will admit it, that there is a huge pressure, especially if you're from an Indian family. And I don't really blame the Indian family for this, to be honest, because you start realizing that, especially myself, when I was young, I honestly saw very little successful Indian elders who were in non-conventional professions. Most of the successful Indian elders I knew were doctors, lawyers, and engineers. And I think when you're young, that's when you get a mindset and you start putting yourself in people's shoes, right? And so I don't blame my parents for this, and I don't blame anyone who has motivated me to career. But I think it comes to a point where you need to stop and ask yourself if you have the right motivations to pursue a career in medicine. And I think while I was doing A-levels, I had good people, lecturers who told me this, who made me aware of this, that your past influences are important And you need to acknowledge them. By the same time, you need to make a conscious decision, an informed decision for yourself, if it's right for you. Because you don't want to be in a career, and when things go wrong, you don't want to go back and blame your parents, blame others. You make that decision and you live with the consequences of your decisions.
Would you say that health sciences is now a passion of yours?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me, I think people take it for granted. Once, if someone tells you that they do medicine, a lot of people take it for granted to ask them why medicine. I mean, people don't ask that to other careers, but they do it to doctors and also medical students. And what they don't realize is in a lot of careers, you may have a motivation going in, a preset motivation going in, but a lot of what interests you in your career is formed while you are doing what you do and while you are going through the path. Because you may think you have an idea of medicine before coming into it. So I did attachments and also shadowing before coming into doctor. So I spent a week in the clinic. But is that reflective of the entire, a whole host of experience that I'm experiencing in medical school? That's not the case. It really is how you go through your day-to-day work and how you convince yourself that not to give up and how you want to take every challenge and turn it into something that you enjoy. I think that realistically speaking, right, what your parents want you to do, there is no running away from it, because when our parents are emotionally invested in us and they want to see us succeed, so therefore they have expectations of what they want us to do out of mostly good intentions. And growing up, those intentions and feelings are bound to rub off on you. And it all comes from a good place. But it is important before you decide on a terminal career for yourself to stop and ask, do I know what I'm signing up to? So most of that can be done by shadowing the people who already work in their career, by talking to people who already work in their career. And number two, for careers in medicine, where you have to spend a lot of time with people, getting yourself embroiled in people's lives, you have to have had worked with people and know that you can stand working with people, because it's easy to expect yourself to be altruistic all the time, but it's actually quite a bit to ask. And it's quite a difficult undertaking to be selflessly involved in people's life a lot. And that can take a toll on people. So after that, after you've made that decision, I think it's good that you stick with it. I won't lie and say that I have not had second doubts, that some days are so difficult that you ask yourself, why did I do this? I think that comes with any career, but as long as you had been true to yourself in the beginning and you continue to not give up and be true to yourself throughout, and sometimes it's also a matter of telling yourself that this is what you signed up for, and sometimes you have to be hard on yourself too. And that will get you through the days. And when in good days, you realize, okay, those bad days were worth it.
I read that you'll be doing a double master's program in Oxford, a master's of science in international health and tropical medicine, and a master's of science in integrated immunology. First of all, what are these courses about? And also, what drew you to these fields?
Okay. So just a disclaimer that getting the scholarship is no guarantee that I will gain admission to these courses. So I'm still applying to these courses. So I hope to pursue international health and tropical medicine and immunology. So what motivated me was during medical school itself, I had done a few, laboratory experience in Singapore where I had the opportunity to do research on dengue. And while I was there in Singapore, I was working with this PhD student. And she was hugely inspiring and helpful. But one thing that was very apparent to me is how much of a big disconnect there was between the people who do the laboratory research and come up with all these findings, let's say vaccines and treatment, and also the clinicians who see the patients. Sometimes there's no parley between these two different groups of people. And I realized that me being there at the laboratory and me bringing my insights and my experiences as a medical student, having seen dengue patients, really helped mold a perspective of what actually dengue presents with as patient in patients and how it's treated to the entire laboratory and the team working on dengue there. So that was what motivated me to apply for the integrated immunology per se, because a lot of these tropical infectious diseases like dengue, they have got an underlying problem in the immunological basis behind them. So, and that's stopping us from progressing further.
What does that mean?
For example, okay, and an easy example to give is the dengue vaccine that was rolled out a few years ago in Philippines. So the vaccine, once it was already given to people, then the government started realizing that actually the vaccine worsens disease in this small group of people, and that had a huge backlash. And what was not understood at that point is that dengue actually interacts with our immune system. And for some group of people, it worsens the disease. For some group of people, it helps. So there's this very complex interplay between our immune system and also the virus. And it has been studied, but it's still largely understudied. And that's stopping us from forming useful intervention.
Forgive my ignorance, but do you find dengue to be a particularly dangerous disease? I mean, I ask this because some of my family members had dengue, and I think the doctor pretty much just told them to drink water, rest up, and wait for the storm to pass, and it worked.
Yeah, you're right. So that patients with dengue can present with a spectrum of different diseases. So like you said, some of them don't even need to get admitted because they've got a very mild form of disease. But like I said, dengue virus interacts with our immune system in ways that we don't quite fully understand. And a small group of patients can go into this severe form of dengue and it can be fatal. And that's how more than 200 people die of dengue every year in our country. So it is a big problem. It overwhelms healthcare systems even before COVID-19. But it also has a lot of financial burden. It costs 150 million ringgit in Malaysia every year. So it definitely is a big disease to study on. And it's a disease that is very local to our region, to the tropical region. So I think we should take charge of studying about this disease and also finding out different interventions for the disease.
Yeah. Right. And do you wonder about the behavioral aspect of this? And what I mean by that is, for decades now, we've struggled with getting people to change their behavior to prevent dengue cases. How do you think a cure of dengue will change how we approach or tackle dengue, especially in the community?
So what you mentioned is exactly what I told the interview committee, actually, that there is a huge socio-economic and a behavioral side of diseases. And that was the reason why I want to pursue international health and tropical medicine, because that course really helps us understand all these complex behavioral and socioeconomic, and also to some aspect environmental issues that affect diseases. But the thing that I can comment on from my understanding about the behavioral aspect is it really depends on how well our advice is communicated to different communities. And this is what we usually term as risk communication. And risk communication is quite a challenging task, especially for a diverse community like Malaysia. For example, you can't use the same communication strategy for people in KL and apply it to people in Sabah and Sarawak in the rural areas. So that's a challenge that has to be overcome to motivate behavioral modification. And also another thing to remember is that behavioral modifications are also dependent on how wealthy or the socioeconomic backgrounds of different communities. So there was also this discussion going on in Twitter recently about how the low-cost apartments and also how deplorable the conditions in the low-cost apartments are, and how that's probably the reason why there are high rates of dengue in these places. So can you really blame people for their surrounding if that's probably not even their primary source of trouble? at that point, would you really be thinking of cleaning up your surrounding outside if you can't put food on the table?
Right.
So there's all these different aspects that also come into play when we talk about behavior, which is why it's easier to go with a biomedical approach. But these things also need to be addressed.
Well, Sebastian, I must say that when I woke up this morning, I did not think that I would have a conversation about dengue and be utterly engrossed by it. So thank you for that. I hope you smash it at Oxford and eventually go on to find a cure for dengue. Good luck and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Dash.
That was Subhashan Vadibela, final year medical student at the University of Malaya, who has been awarded the highly prestigious Rhodes Scholarship. And we were having a chat on his journey thus far, what it takes to achieve academic excellence, and also why he's on a quest to find a cure for dengue. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or you can even subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. Once again, I'm Bashir Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.